God save our gracious queen, long live our noble queen, God save the queen. Yeah, that's right. It's open week, which means we celebrate all things British in golf. I'd just like to forewarn you that I've got one, possibly two, half-baked ideas for this podcast. And just to reassure you, neither of those ideas was opening with the national anthem. That idea came to me as I pressed record. But I think it's a good one, so it's going to stay. Now, it's the Open. You can call it the British Open if you want. I just think less of you. Unless you're British and know better than that, then I think more of you, because you're doing it to upset people who get upset by such things. It's complicated, right? Isn't the Open wonderful? Like, it's probably the highlight of the golfing calendar globally. Now, why do I say that? I say that because you might think it's the US Masters. Nobody thinks it's the US Open, and certainly no one thinks it's the US PGA. So, why is the Open better than the US Masters? Let me explain to you clearly and succinctly. It's about legacy. Okay? And the US Masters has formed an okay legacy. And it is forming a wonderful legacy. But the Open has already formed a wonderful legacy. And, you know, when the places the Open visits are as amazing as Portrush. And Portrush is not even one of the best places it goes, according to many, although I beg to differ. That talks of the caliber of venue that golf can be hosted in the United Kingdom. How amazing is that? You know, the places we turn down to host the Open are better than pretty much anywhere the USPGA is hosted. And I say that with the authority of someone who's never played anywhere that the USPGA is hosted. But you just know, like, yeah, Bethpage is a fantastic track, but until you've got a 400 year history, you're never going to be the old course. Until you're somewhere that has had golf on it for hundreds of years in one form or another, Bethpage just don't cut it. And you can't bake that. And there's golf courses in the UK that we don't use for the British Open with more history, more gravitas than the places that they play the USPGA on. So that's out. The US Open, well, let's just say it's not called the Open, is it? So that's out. Now, the Masters. In fairness, you've got a V, haven't you? You've got a V. So why is it second to the Open? And I think a lot of that is the clues in the name. It's wonderful that the Open is still an open event. Anyone can play their way in. And you can say that about the US Open, but then you can also say about the, you know, your local golf club's open event. So, if you're going to say, oh, but the US Open is open to the public, but so is, you know, Conway Golf Club's August Summer Open. God bless Conway Golf Club, Curtis Cup venue. Do you get my point? You can't rank your second tier open as better than my open because it's an open, because we invented it. It does a lot boils down to, but we invented it. So the Open is by far better than the US Open, but then the Masters. I like the concept, elite, exclusive. You know, golf should own that a little more, I think. As much as I'm a champion for public access golf, there's a place for private golf. And Augusta almost hits that nail on the head perfectly, apart from the sexism and racism in its history. So yeah, well done for being exclusive. Not so well done for being racist. But the Open, you see, it's got a bit more of a working class edge to it. You can be a man of the people and win the Open on your home track. I know it's not likely to happen, but there's a possibility that a club pro from somewhere like Portrush could qualify and win. Like, if the wind blows, and I saw the photos of the practice day today, I am recording this on Wednesday, day before the Open kicks off. So pro-am, well, not pro-am day, but traditionally pro-am day. The weather looked mean, which means it's anybody's game. And by that, I mean it's anybody's game. You can be a seasoned tour pro, major winner, and sure, that gives you an edge on the field, but that edge is negated by a solid club pro who knows the track better than you, who knows the wind better than you. Certainly on days 1 to 3, I would stand by that comment in a court of law. Yeah, on Sunday afternoon down the stretch, who's your money on, Brooks Koepka or Johnny McNobody from Portrush? And that's fine, I appreciate that. But if Johnny McNobody's got 4 or 5 shots on Brooks, who knows, eh? It's just a thought, and that's what makes the Open special. These stories, the history. Augusta's never going to quite have that, you know, Roy of the Rovers moment, the boy hero, the local celeb moment. Because Augusta can never have that. So, we've put that to rest. We all know now that the Open is the best major. Let me just tell you something about my favourite Open moments. I've got three for you. And in no particular, but this is reverse order. But I may change the order, you see, so I'm giving myself that caveat. My favourite Open moment was, it's deeply personal. It was watching Jack Nicklaus for 5 holes at Birkdale in 91 on the Friday. And he was, he just played par golf. He dropped a shot on the first hole I saw him, but pulled it back on, say, the third hole I saw him. He was in the middle of his round and rolled in a, you know, 15-foot for birdie. It's not the most scintillating golf, but it was the access that British golf gives you. And again, making the Open better than the Masters. Because me and my dad, neither of us rich. I would be 14, dad, you know, in his middle age. How old would my dad have been then? He'd have been 46. And gosh, only 5 years older than I am now. Anyway, let's phase that. We rocked up at the golf course, paid our embarrassingly cheap entry fee, which would have probably been like £20-25 each. That's like, what, you know, $26 post-Brexit. And we just walked on and followed the golfer who was at the time the greatest of all time. And I got to watch him, I got to hear him, I got to understand how the Golden Bear was on the golf course. And that really inspired me as a young golfer. not to go and hit the range or anything, just the access and to see these guys and look them in the eye, to make eye contact with Jack Nicklaus, was like, this guy's human. I can do this. Now, I didn't. Of course I didn't. But if you're a teenager playing golf and you haven't got Jack Nicklaus dreams, who the fuck are you? Get bigger dreams. And it was just pivotal for me. It made me think, I can do this. If only I'd realized then how good those guys were at putting and how much more I needed to practice my putting, it could have been all so different. But I just watched the long drives. I just watched the long drives. But it doesn't matter. I had an amazing time. Long drives and backspin. Which, to be honest, what's changed? And stealing range balls. Maxfly Bellata golf balls off the range were, you know, just there to be taken. And I did. Many, many, many. So that's my number three open moment. But it's going to, in sentimental value, being somewhere with my dad, who's not with us anymore, seeing Jack, you know, sentimentally, that's probably my number one. But in reality, obviously, that doesn't mean much to anyone else. So it's number three. Now, moving swiftly on, my favourite open moment, number two, was watching Nick Faldo win at Muirfield. I watched him on TV, but it was just something about the way that guy just owned Sunday afternoon. And what stands out in my mind is two or three shots that you don't see anymore. I remember the weather wasn't so great, and you know, the guys had waterproofs on and off all afternoon. And Faldo at one point had 175 into a hole and hit knocked down 5-iron, and it was like a long chip he played. And he hit it to a couple of feet and just slid in this punchy cut that looked like a long chip. Probably flew head height, what you would call a stinger in modern parlance. And you don't see that shot making in tour golf anymore. And that's from a guy who, to be honest, wasn't famous for being a shot maker. Not that he was bomb and gouge, again, in using modern language. He was just fairway green, fairway green, fairway green. He wasn't like the big hitters today who were just driver, hack out with a wedge, tap in birdie. He was just like driver, 7-iron to 15 feet, rolling the putt. Driver, 9-iron to 8 feet, rolling the putt. You know, just awesome golf, but almost boring, but amazing technically. But actually to see him there, show some of the old Faldo from the mid-late 80s, just dreaming up shots to work his way around a Lynx golf course in the wind, was amazing. And even at that age, I respected him as a shot maker. Like, he's hitting shots I can't hit. Not just because he's bigger and stronger than me, but I can't hit a 5-iron almost along the floor, let's say 20, 30 yards shorter, with that control. I've just not got that. And again, that inspired me to go out and get that. Because that's what watching tour golf should do. And I think now, it's sad to say, all watching tour golf does is make kids want to go and hit the ball harder, further and higher. And that is sad. That truly is sad. But moving on, my favourite moment from the Open, and I'm torn, I'm truly, truly torn, and there's a pause here. Can I have a joint top? Because one I've not really seen, I've only read about, but it was magnificent. Jack Nicklaus won an open at St Andrews. And on the 18th, Jack pulls driver, bangs one, 315 through the back. And you're like, oh, well, Brooks can't commit to I'm that far. Yeah, he could. And do you know what? Brooks Koepka could probably hit Jack's driver that far. Like, you've got to give Brooks and those guys credit where it's due. But nobody was doing it then. Okay? Jack Nicklaus understood so much about golf that people use in golf today. And people thought he was stupid for doing it. I was brought up with some amazing golfers around me who would tell me, if you want to hit the ball far, you hit it low. Okay? And I can remember just, you know, watching guys hit these bullet drives that wouldn't really get above tree level. And they'd fly 240, 250, hit the deck hard and run. And they'd have this beautiful trajectory that you can't get with a modern golf ball. And trying to hit those shots. And then watching Greg Norman, even though I wasn't ever a fan, hit those drives, but like just harder and flatter, was beautiful. Like truly beautiful. Jack, in the 70s, worked out in the dirt. You teared up and hit it high. And the ball lands softly and you can control it because he had spinnier equipment, drivers and woods and golf balls that generated more spin. But he realized if I can hit it high, it flies further and stops. So overall, I may lose distance, but I gain carry distance and I've got that. That's me. And then, of course, on a hard day, the spin doesn't work and the ball runs, but on a soft day, I'm not relying on 30 yards of run. The ball's flying and stopping, so I win. And boy, did Jack win. And then he translated that to his irons as well. If I hit my long irons high, they land softly and stop. It may cost me a couple of yards in distance, but I gain that in accuracy. Nobody was teaching that when Jack learned the game. I'm not even sure his coach was teaching that. That is amazing. So let's roll back. Jack smashing driver through 18 at St Andrews. Into the wind with a persimmon driver and a Balata golf ball. You can't imagine how difficult that is. Like, you truly can't. If you've never hit a wooden driver or a Balata golf ball, you haven't a clue how soft and heavy those things are by today's standards. I used to play Balata and persimmon. I held on to my persimmon driver for as long as possible because I trusted it. I had an S400 in it, Ben Sayers persimmon head. I could fly that to 270 on a really good hit, 250 on a normal hit. I did not realize how long I was. And because my friends at the time knew how big-headed I was, nobody told me. I compared myself to one player, possibly two, in my region who could out-hit me. And I figured, that's how far tour pros hit, that's how far I hit. I now realise there were a couple of freaks in my golfing community who hit the ball unfeasibly far, but probably could not keep it straight. So, my point being, Jack Nicklaus was a great golfer and a golfing genius, and he demonstrated it by smashing one through 18 at St Andrews. Just incredible. Incredible to do that with that gear, under that much pressure. Just what a moment. And I say that as someone who's not really a fan of big drives in this golf, but when it was persimmon, I was a fan of big drives. Now it doesn't excite me. But then there was an art and a skill to it, and now it's just not the same. It is truly not the same. So my other favourite open moment, I'm debating whether to tell you because I don't want to downgrade what amazing stuff I've just said about Jack. But you know, I'm going to say it. A player I did not appreciate at the time, but I've watched and read about since, is Seve Ballesteros. I did not like him when I was a kid. I was a Faldo kid. Seve, Woozy, those guys were almost the anti-Faldos. Anti-fa, if you could think. Now, anti-Faldo's a funny Twitter. Anti-Faldo. But seeing Seve at Lytham, that was amazing. Truly. Look, go and watch that at YouTube. Watch that guy swing. Watch the swag. Listen to the way that ball is struck. Remember, that's a sponge of a golf ball by today's standards. And listen to the crack that makes off those irons. It's incredible. People talk about like Henrik Stenson, Louis Oosthuizen. I'm trying to think of an American ball striker who's famous. One will come back to me. When they strike the ball, there is a different sound. Seve had that because it was so pure and so hard. You know, Seve's not really remembered as a great driver of the ball, but he was long. And Seve is famous for his short game, which was amazing. But his iron play too was just beautiful. Like, the shots he could imagine. Like, how do you look at a shot that the whole world of golf sees as a fade and just think, ah, oh, yeah. What I will do is I will make the low draw. I'm putting on his bad Spanish accent. What I'll do is make a low draw, and I'm going to bang it into the bunker, into the ground, just before the bunker. The ball's going to be coming in so hard, it's going to roll through the bunker and trickle up by the hole almost every time. Just, where do you have the balls to do that, Seve? Just, ugh. I mean, he's hitting those shots with the underlying courage of, there is not a bunker on this golf course I cannot get up and down from. So I'm walking off this hole with par, but if this shot goes well, I'm walking off with birdie or better, because it might go in. Just genius. So watching Seve win at Lytham, get those videos on your YouTube. Because this is golf and it's legacy. It is all about legacy. If you don't respect the history of golf, I'm not sure I respect the history of you. Why do I say that in such a cocky way? Let me explain. It's because golf is a game about traditions. More than any sport I've been involved in, please remember I have a phys ed degree, so I've had a glimpse and some experience in more sports than most. Golf is about traditions. It's about indulging yourself in those traditions. It's about making a conscious choice to take part in the wonderful traditions of golf. And by acknowledging that the Open Championship is by far the best and most significant major of the year, you become part of something bigger. A history. A body of fans that know golf better than most. You could even say you are better than most by taking part in that history. Because British golf, and by extension European golf, is better than American style golf. Because we do have holes and golf courses for hitting long drives. St Andrews is a driver's paradise. There's no rough. Okay? And because par is an irrelevant number, if a tour pro or even you play that course on a day where it's dry and there's no wind, you're going to shoot some crazy low score. But I tell you, if it's blowing more than, say, 15, like more than a club of wind, well, that changes. And you might shoot a memorable score, but that score may not be memorable for the right reasons. You see, golf, good golf, legendary golf, is not just about you. It's about participating in your surroundings. And if you're in an artificial man-made paradise, Augusta, it's not quite the same. Playing links golf, and therefore, again, by extension, European golf, you have this natural connection with where you are. You have to think about the grass you're hitting from. Is it the same as the grass the ball's going to be landing on? What's the wind going to do? What's the wind doing now? What's it doing halfway? And what's it doing on the green? And that's made more difficult because of the natural shape of the land. You can't see the green. It's impossible and frustrating at times. And that's why it's amazing. If I wanted to watch target practice, I'd play darts. And I've expressed my love for the PGA Tour and its bomb and gouge golf. I love seeing Justin Thomas rip one 380 and then hit a wedge that lands 20 feet past the hole and spins back to an inch. You are a fool if you don't think that's fun. But I want to see him navigate Port Rush in a sensible score to know that he can actually play my game. Because when I see these tour pros who aren't used to links golf come to my golf course, my type of golf course, and shoot 85, yeah, the pins may be in a tough place. Yeah, they may be playing from the tips. But if I'm shooting par around there on a normal day, I reckon I'd shoot 80 from their setup because it's my track. To be honest, when I was playing regular links golf on courses like Conwy, which, look it up, Curtis Cup 2020, it's a serious championship golf course. I was hoping to shoot par or better from the regular competition, men's competition tees. They've got a tournament championship set up. I'm still looking to break 80. Of course I am. I mean, I'm still looking to shoot par. Of course, I appreciate under tournament pressure. If I was in the Curtis Cup, I might shit the bed. I'm still looking to break 80. So when I see some guy coming over from the States or Asia who can only drive flip on a wedge, well, you know, you've not got it, have you? Because I can also hit a drive. I'm not the longest player, but I can hit drive 8-iron where you're hitting drive wedge. And I hope to hit the green. I might make a couple of putts. But you can't play my golf course because you've not got the chops. Now, Augusta, coming back to my original point, does have a little element of that. There is a uniqueness to that track that people find difficult. And the designers work hard to keep that challenge in there for the modern golfer. And there is an element of that in Lynx Golf too. Courses are tweaked and changed, but we don't need to because we've got the weather. We've got ancient designs that weren't created to sell houses or green fees. They were created to develop a beautiful game. Now, with that in mind, let me bring you back to the ultimate question. Why do you not think the Open is the best tournament? Because the Open is the best tournament, because it's played on tracks designed to facilitate a beautiful game. Not for TV ratings, not to sell houses, not even to sell holidays, although I hear Port Rush is doing very well on that. And good on them, because what a lovely place to go on a trip. Are you with me? You know, while I pause for breath a few minutes in, well, 30, into my love letter to the Open. Yeah, I almost said British Open. Suck it. While I'm 30 minutes into that love letter, ask yourself some serious questions about your life decisions if you don't agree with me. Why would you think a faux major, one that was created, is better than the Open, the original major, the major? You know, they're talking about making TPCs, the players at Sawgrass, the fifth major. Fuck that. It's a great tournament, but it's not a major, is it? Like this on No Laying Up, I'd rather see the John Deere become a major. It's a serious tournament. I'd rather see the Waste Management become a major because it has its place and it develops its own legacy. Sawgrass is developing its own legacy because the PGA are desperate for it too. The Waste Management has its own legacy because it's freaking awesome. What would you rather go and see? TPC, the Players' Championship at Sawgrass, or Waste Management? If you think Sawgrass, you're wrong. All right? Because Waste Management looks like a laugh. I don't even drink. I just want to go there and shout at golfers and laugh when they go into water and wet my pants when they chop some of those corners. Because it's an amazing track for fun golf. Okay? So if the Waste Management is better than Sawgrass, the tournament at Sawgrass, do you see how easy it is now for you to accept the right decision? That the Open is better than Augusta. It's better than the secondary US Open, Tier 2. And it's better than the PGA Championship, because what even is that? The worst Avenger. So on that, I hope I've given you enough to think about. I'm going to write a shocking title for this podcast and let's get some clicks. Thank you to the hundreds of people who downloaded last week's podcast. Thank you that you've listened this far. Who do I think is going to win the Open? We all want Rory to win. Rory or Tiger? Rory or Tiger or someone weird, otherwise I'm not interested. Has to be said, that's where I'm at. Like someone weird, it could be any of the Irish guys. Like Darren Clarke, that'd be amazing. G-Mac, it'd be outstanding. I've got half an interest in Adam Scott winning. Rory, I'm all in. Tiger, I'm all in. JT, I can't remember if he's back from injury, but if he is, I'm all in. Anyone else? You better do something to excite me over the week. Otherwise, I probably won't watch on Sunday. Have a wonderful, wonderful Open Championship. Goodbye.